Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we officially say goodbye to the international break. The SPFL returns on Friday, then on to a big weekend across the coming days. For those who had a good start, time to pick up where they left off. And for those who've struggled, have they fixed it during that international break? Tonight's the night many of you have been hoping for. We turn our attentions back to domestic football in the company of our special guest, who we'll get to in just a second, and then two sort of regular less special guests in Brian Graham and Marvin Bartley. How are you? Are you well?
Very, very well, Gordon. Very well.
You looking forward to
the way he's walked in tonight, by the way.
Shorts, Crocs, T-shirt, baby oil on his biceps.
Went for a massage this afternoon.
Pathetic. Absolutely, need to get this guy
feel
a job.
Tremendous.
Looking forward to the return of, because you are an adopted Scot, you take international breaks to heart now, I've noticed, but looking forward to getting back into the usual madness.
Yeah, I think the hangover from kind of the two games and all the talking points have been they've been gone over, and like you said, the domestic stuff coming back is what we really enjoy. There's some massive games over the weekend, as you said, starting on Friday in the Championship, and then, you know, the big stuff comes back on the Saturday. So yeah, looking forward to it, mate.
Brian Graham, you're wondering what we're on about. No break for you. Partick Thistle had a Challenge Cup game at the weekend. Your women played on Sunday. We'll move over to
that. I would rather speak about the women's game on Saturday. Forget the Saturday game.
Battered Motherwell for Park, I noticed. So no break for you, but all going well.
Yes, all going well. Obviously, it was a very disappointing result on Saturday, but the girls, credit to them, we were playing probably our closest rivals for the top six this year, and we went there and done a job on them. 4-0 victory, real confidence booster, and we needed it, so we'll move on from there.
And our special guest, a man who's second only to Hugh Keevans in the number of mentions he'll get for things that go wrong on this show. It's the new head of refereeing operations, but that's very, very formal, isn't it? I think we just, you know, former referee looking after refereeing issues at the moment, Willie Collum. How are you?
I'm great, Gordon. I feel like I'm fulfilling half an ambition. My first ambition would be to come in Clyde One, so I'm there, but I would prefer to be appearing in the GBX, I think. It was always my favourite listening to that on Saturday night.
Did not see that coming, by the way.
How do we move on from that exclusive at the start? Willie Collum, GBX fan. Incredible. Genuinely, though, it's a delight to have you. We don't often get the chance to hear from referees, never mind, you know, have you in here in the studio. I've opened this up on Twitter and said people can give us their questions and so on for you. So that'll be, you know, what you're letting yourself in for.
I'm braced. I'm okay.
I'm just more worried about you two.
We'd be all right, Marvin.
That's why he's in the middle, so he can't get out.
How are these two to referee? Because I think they're a nightmare for me in here. So they're two of the biggest, angriest pundits we've got, I think.
No, I got on great with the two guys. I don't have a bad word to say about any of them.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Gentle giants, Gordon.
Is the feeling mutual?
I enjoyed Willie. I'm actually gutted he's no still on the pitch. And we spoke about that just off air there, that he's missing the pitch. But at the same time, I thought he was one of the best referees we've had in Scotland over the years. I've mentioned it previous. But listen, he's went into a new role now. And credit to him for coming on the show tonight, because a lot of other referees and people in his position wouldn't have done so. He's came on and he's willing to discuss refereeing decisions and going over it, so credit to him for that.
Well, do you know what, I was hoping I could dig up some dirt and, you know, type your names into
I've
Google, but all that comes up, Brian Graham, a quote from Brian Graham. It says, if you look at our top referee Willie Collum, for example, I've swore at Willie before, and he just pulls you and says, who are you talking to? And then you go, listen, I apologise. And there's dialogue between player and ref, and there is a bit of understanding.
You move on. It's just, it's common ground on the pitch. I think sometimes now referees, listen, it's, You get angry in the football pitch. Don't get me wrong, everybody wants to win, so there's going to be a wee bit of a heated moment, and sometimes the ref gets it in the neck. But credit to Willie, he'd come and go with him. So there was no, some other ref, I've sworn at other referees, there's been a straight red, by the way. So.
And for you, Marvin Bartley, how's this for a headline? Marvin Bartley has warned Edinburgh Derby referee Willie Collum to keep his eyes open at Tynecastle after wrongly receiving two red cards this season?
I remember
always
that.
About you and your sense of injustice.
That was Aaron Rafe, wasn't it? Both got overturned.
I don't know.
Yeah, I remember those two. Nick Walsh was one of them. Nicky Devlin got me sent off.
We'll get him on the phone later on. But anyway, usual number 01419511025. We couldn't have timed this any better because it probably is a quieter day, if you like. We're trying to get over the international break. There's not loads happening on the club front, so it's a pleasure to have Willie along, and hopefully we can understand a bit more about what goes into the processes of reaching these decisions. Because I think, Willie, shows like this kind of revolve around disagreement, and it should still be there. We'll never take that away. You know, I take it referees are comfortable with that as well, as much as people maybe won't realise it from the outside.
Yeah, of course, and we know that in refereeing, things are never black and white, you know, in terms of football decisions. I think it's important to understand that. What I would say is that as well, when people expected VAR would bring perfection, you know, and there's still debate, there's still subjective decisions, so that'll always be the case, and there'll always be robust discussions about what's right and wrong, and it'll never be perfect. But what we hope with things like VAR is there'll be more correct decisions than wrong.
How are you enjoying the new role? Because obviously a long time spent on the pitch, really in the thick of it, and you're still kind of in the thick of it, but in a very different way. How are you finding that transition?
I was saying to Brian off air there that I miss the pitch. You know, 31 years of my life I've spent on the field. It was probably a difficult decision for me to make up. I had a very good job in education. I was enjoying being the pitch, but I knew that my career was coming to an end. You know, I could feel my legs getting tired towards the end. And this is the next best thing for me is leading Scottish refereeing, try and get Scottish refereeing back to the very top again, particularly in European and world standing as well. I think that's a target. Sometimes in Scotland, we're quick to put ourselves down, put our football down. But for me, we need to set high targets, high objectives. You know, the national team qualified for the Euros, the last two Euros. We never had any representation in terms of Scottish refereeing. And I want to take us back there. I want to get us to the top table again.
How would you rate the start to the season? I hope I'm not disappointing anyone out there, but I'm not sure we can go over every decision given for the last 50 years, as is often the want on this show. I think we'll probably need to draw the line somewhere, but let's go since you took the role, since the start of the season. Again, if we acknowledge that we're not all going to agree on everything, how satisfied are you with the standards so far?
I think we've made a good start. I think first and foremost, when we looked at the position we were in before the season, we knew there was room for improvement. We worked really hard at trying to find a consistent level, particularly around things like handball. I'm sure you'll have some things to ask me about that. But we wanted to find that consistent level. I was criticised for saying the phrase, we wanted more football understanding. I stick by that. That doesn't mean you ignore the laws of the game, but it means that we hope that decisions are more understandable for fans. And I think the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, we've made a good start. I still think there's room for improvement, without doubt. And a lot of people have said to me in the last fortnight or so, has it been good so far? Are you happy? And of course, I'm saying I am happy, but I'm also reminding people it's September. There's a long way to go. There's many decisions to be made, and we'll be keeping the referees in terms of on their toes in terms of high-level coaching.
Very loosely linked to sort of the journey you guys are going on. Brian, you still do both. And Marvin having stepped from playing into coaching. I wonder, Willie, how what the difference is like when you're kind of responsible for coaching the referees, but, you know, once they take to the field, much like the players do, there's only so much you can do. How are you finding that?
I'm finding that difficult because usually when you woke up on a Saturday morning, you'd one game to worry about. It was yours. Now I need to worry about everybody. And I'm trying to get out and about to as many matches as I can. Obviously, we've appointed a VAR manager. The VAR manager is in the hub most weeks, so I'm able to get out and about and to stadiums, but you're in constant contact checking what's happening in the games. So it's difficult, the pressure they're dealing with, seeing how everybody's performing rather than, as I say previously, it was just myself.
It doesn't matter what you're a player, manager. We've all been involved in football for a long time, and I know my playing career, I can't play forever. That's why I'm doing the management with the women's side at the moment. But we always want to stay involved in football. It's what we love. It's what we've known. It's what we do. And Big Marv has obviously went into the management side of things. He's desperate to get back in again. So we always want to keep one foot in the door. We don't want to, because we'd miss it. See, wake up in the morning, you're not involved in football, then we'd find it very, very hard.
I'll be honest, Brian, I said that if I'd retired for the pitch and had not stayed involved in refereeing, I think in terms of my mental health, I would have struggled because it's been part of my life for 31 years, you know, and it's been a great passion, a great love of mine, and I think I would have found it really difficult to cope. But this is the next best thing. I feel this is a good transition period moving from the field into the head of refereeing role.
When referees retire, though, maybe they get that sense of relief of not getting the stick and not being on the receiving end, whereas you're not really getting that relief as such. You're still fine with that, still just accept it's part of the life.
I think in refereeing, whether you're active in the pitch, whether you are in the role that I'm in or other roles within refereeing, you need resilience. You know, resilience is a quality that referees need. None more so than ever when you think now that a referee needs to go to a monitor at the side of the pitch and admit they're wrong and change it. And that can be difficult. That can be a challenge. And you need a lot of resilience there. That's something we work hard with the referees to build that so that they're confident of being able to continue. My role as well, I've had a lot of abuse in my time, but you become
sure.
maybe a wee bit, but you become resilient. I've always said that criticism of referees is part of the game. I've always accepted that, but I've been very open in this role in saying that when it goes beyond the acceptable levels of criticism, that's when it's a problem for us in refereeing, when it starts to affect people in terms of their mental health or affects their family or affects them being able to go out the door to go to their job.
What are you looking for as a professional player or coach from referees? I always say it on this show, I think if your starting point has to be mistakes will be made, surely. Mm-hmm. That just has to be it, because we're kind of striving for a perfection that doesn't exist. So what is it you're looking for?
I think dialogue's the biggest thing. I think Brian spoke about it earlier, and listen, I've had conversations with Willie on the pitch as well. I remember once I said to him, you had actually having a stinker in this game. He said, so are you. I actually just ran off and laughed because, do you know what I mean?
Because he was right.
Yeah, he was right. I got subbed not too long after that. But no, listen, when referee says that to you, you can have a bit of banter. As Brian said, it's when it becomes robotic. I think that makes it difficult for everybody, not just the referee. I think it makes it difficult for the players as well, because everyone all of a sudden on edge. And there has to be that kind of, listen, as long as it doesn't step over a line, like Willie said there. But I think it is important that you can have a conversation, you can speak to referees, and they can give a bit back as well.
Willie, part of the reason that you're here, or not part of the reason, but it coincides with you and I worked on something on behalf of the Scottish FA, where we looked at a series of incidents from this season, and it's out there by... You can check it out on YouTube. It's in the Scottish FA's YouTube channel. I won't explain every decision that we went through, but basically key incidents from the season where we listened to the VAR audio and you told us whether you thought the referee and then the VAR got that right. I'll spoil some of it, which personally for me was quite interesting. You admitted on multiple occasions that you thought decisions were wrong, which is good. I think most people want to hear that. Why is it important? Why did you agree to do that? I'm glad you did, but you know, it's not something that we've really heard before. Why? What's changing? Why is it that you think these things are important?
I said when I came into post that we needed to be transparent in refereeing. You know, we needed to have clarity around about decision making. Not so much just whether a decision was right or wrong, but how we in particular reached that decision. I think it's allowed us, the programme, to look at some key match incidents, listen to the audio, see why the match officials are making that decision. And what I'm really pleased about, if I'm honest, Gordon, is that the referees are on board with that as well. So everything I've said in that programme, that show, I've discussed with the referees as well. And that contributes to our coaching of the referees, what we've said, how they're going to improve. Because we don't just look at decisions on a week-to-week basis and say, you know, that decision's wrong, let's move on. We need to analyse it. We analyse the position of the referee, what images did the VAR use, to make sure that we're trying to be consistent, that the next week we don't make the same error. So I think for me, it's about... I think the UEFA Football Board last season said in particular, run about VAR, that VAR needed to be more understandable to players, to coaches, to fans. And I hope that this show opens the door to that. Mm. We've nothing to hide. I've nothing to hide. The referees have nothing to hide. And that's why we want to be very open.
Yeah, well, we can run through more of that as the show goes on. I said you can tweet, you can give us a call as normal. We'll see if we can get Brian and Marvin to fall out at some point as well. It's been a bit of a live-in so far. I'm not really impressed with that. Let's see what Andy on the line has for us. How are you, Andy?
Good evening, Gordon. Gentlemen. Good evening, Willie. How are you doing?
Great, thanks.
Good, good. Listen, I'm going to. I know for a fact you guys don't want to talk about the specific instance. However, I might use something as an example. Just it's that whole thing about transparency and clarity, right?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of wee things for me. It's just that I don't understand genuinely, right? But the second observation I've got is more a suggestion, and I just wanted your views on it, Willie. The first one, I'll just use the Celtic Rangers game. I know you'll get a lot of this tonight, but the last game, the offside decision, right?
Yeah.
The question I had for you was, is that offside decision made automated? Is it automated, that decision, where the system says yes or no? Or is the human input part of it, the person in the box? I know people say it's talks about drawing lines and stuff like that, but is that decision made for the assistant VAR referee, or is there a human element to that part?
It's a really good question, Willie. I think people really want to know how that works.
It's a really good question. And I was in the hub that day, the Old Firm game. I was there. We have our old VAR command, so myself and John Moss were in the VAR to oversee things. So if you look at the Euro, it's semi-automated, so they're able, really the system works for itself there. I think if you wanted to speed everything up and you wanted to make offside really quick and super quick and get things and moved faster, that would be the approach to use. I know in England they will use that approach soon.
Will that cost more money though?
It's a great point, Ryan. I'm just coming to it. So it's 1.3 million.
Wow.
So we would be asking the clubs to contribute 1.3 million to get that. We would get to decisions quicker, without a shadow of a doubt. What happens in the incident, if I refer to the decision in the Old Firm game, where the goal was chalked off? So the VAR and the AVAR work through a process with drawing the lines. They would draw the line in the correct positions. So at the body part that can play the ball, that's where we judge it. So if somebody's arm is sticking out, you don't draw it at the fingertips, because that's not a body part that you can play the ball with. So the lines are correctly drawn. That's then inputted. So when the lines are drawn for the attacker and the defender, because it was so tight that it required a line on both, on the attacker and the defender. Sometimes you start to draw a line and you can quickly see that somebody's 3 yards onside or 3 yards offside, and we don't want to waste time because we're against time pressure. But the decision in the Old Firm game, as you know, was very, very tight. So it required the correct lines on the attacker and on the defender. The VAR and the AVAR agree on that. They input it. They work with a video operator from Hawkeye. They actually help put the line. So the VAR will say, move it left, move it right, to make sure it's in the right position. The video operator then asks the VAR and AVAR again, are you content where we're putting the body position on? I have to say, to be very clear and honest, we were very content where the body position lines are on. That's then inputted to the system, and the system then says whether offside or onside. Now, 9 times out of 10, you can tell, because the lines are there and you can see the gap between them. People get frustrated in football about offside, that, you know, not every offside position's punishable, because you could be offside, I'll be out in the wing and you're no active in play or whatever. But what's important to understand, you're offside or you're not. That's just the way it is. I know FIFA are looking, and IFAB are looking at some possibilities where there would need to be clear daylight. That's maybe in the future we need to look at. But in terms of the Old Firm game, I hope that explains it. The VAR and the AVAR are responsible for guiding where the lines should be drawn, the body part.
I'm trying to I've been in and I've seen it, and I'm trying to remember, because we get like a lot of tweets and questions about this. They're not responsible though for making the lines straight. That's done, isn't it? They pick the body part.
So before the game...
But it's not like there's... Because I see this all... I'll get tweets every Saturday, that line squint, or whatever, you know, there's no scope to change the way the line comes across the pitch. That bit comes up on its own, doesn't it?
You do need to identify
the body
position. You need to identify where you want to draw the line, yep. But what I would say is the lines are calibrated by Hawkeye between the Clydesdale House, the VAR hub, and the stadium. So that's created before the game, so that everything's calibrated and ready to go. If there's a problem with that calibration, it's quickly sorted. That's why Hawkeye are on site in the stadium and in the VAR room 5 hours before the match to make sure they sort that. And there's checks and double checks before the game starts as well.
What do you think, Andy?
That's a great, absolutely fantastic. Just to say, Willie, half of the callers are going to tell you there's no Old Firm, it's a Glasgow derby.
Welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard, Willie.
Absolutely. Just to, for fairness then, Willie, just the other side, and this is an idea I've had for a long time.
Sure.
And I wondered whether you thought there was any legs in it, right? We'll go back to the the time, I think you might have been involved actually, when Alistair Johnson handballed it against Rangers at Celtic Park.
I heard about that one actually.
Aye, right, so the penalty was given, no sorry, there was no decision given, but afterwards it showed on the TV screen that there was an offside decision, right? I think the biggest thing for a lot of people then was confusion, and here's leading me to the idea that I've got. Do you know how you get a game, right, and you put in any game now and you'll get the score, you'll get the scorers, you'll get the yellow card and you'll get stats, right? Do you think, Willie, whether or not we could get to a situation where, see VAR decisions, for example, the Alistair Johnston one, along with the goal scorers and the bookings and anything else that's recorded in the stats, just a wee descriptor at the bottom saying, VAR decision, 82 minutes, offside Rangers, for example. I don't know if you could influence that, Willie, but I think it would certainly get that clarity that fans are asking for. But they're saying that, I'll do Gordon at a job because it'll have the calls on the Monday and Tuesday.
No, listen, it's impossible. Because that is the beauty of it. You can do all this. We can move towards better communication. And I'm sure between now and you leaving us, we'll get through all the suggestions for whether it's referees speaking or in-stadium announcements or miking up referees or whatever. You can still do all that and have debate, surely.
Yeah, I think you can. I think it's important to pick up that we have that data, you know, that there is key match incident data, that we're looking at general match incident data. So we have that data about the decisions that were made in a match, you know, how many times there was checks, because there's lots of silent checks with I often hear people in the media saying, well, they've not checked that. Yeah. That's absolute nonsense. Everything's checked, you know, but sometimes they're silent checks. And if everything was a public check, we'd never get the games restarted, you know. So maybe we need to be a bit forward thinking about how we release that data to the wider stakeholders.
Thanks very much to Andy on the line. We'll maybe take a look at some of these incidents that Willie and I covered in the programme that we spoke about, but we'll take a breather and do that next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Marvin Bartley and Brian Graham are joined by Willie Collum on tonight's show, taking your questions on Twitter. You can give us a call as well if you want. We're looking at some of the incidents from the first part of the season. Willie and I have made this show for the Scottish FA, trying to display some of the VAR audio, which is actually quite interesting because I know you don't get to hear it very often, and look at maybe where things could have been done differently. We can talk general points about rules you might want to change or things you'd like to see tweaked, or Willie's experiences of coming up against morning-faced footballers like Brian Graham and Marvin Bartley, or anything else. You can get in touch on the usual number. And so many have tweeted, honestly, thank you so much. You'll appreciate there are loads that I couldn't possibly read out because we'd get taken off air. And then there are really a lot of good sensible ones as well. So I'll try my best to work through them. I did say earlier, Willie, I'm not going to go through every incident you and I discussed on that show. That would kind of defeat the purpose. People can go and watch it in their own time. But just to give people a flavour, as an example, you showed us Celtic against Kilmarnock on the first day of the season, where Kilmarnock goalkeeper comes out, hits Kyogo, he goes down, there was no penalty given, it goes to VAR, and still no penalty. Again, for a bit of a spoiler, you are willing to hold your hands up and say you think that's wrong. How important is that we hear that and hear that there is an acknowledgement that things sometimes don't go right?
I think it's really important. You know, when match officials make errors as well, they hurt. I can speak personally that anybody who thinks a referee goes in, you know, throws his bag in the corner and then says, well, don't need to worry, I'll be in a game next week, they're mistaken. Sometimes it would take me to the Tuesday or the Wednesday before you started to feel good again, because none of us want to make mistakes. Anybody in life, I'm sure the two guys here as players, you know, don't want to make mistakes either. The Celtic Kilmarnock one, yep, it's important. We say we're wrong when we're wrong. But I think what the programme allows us, the show allows us, to put a message out there about why we got it wrong. I explained again without it being a spoiler, I think it's good to discuss though, that the ball's flicked over the wall. It's an unexpected ball for the referee. The referee finds it very hard then to get into position and adjust. How do we improve that in the future? We've coached the referees. You're able to see this incident. We want you to be on your toes. We want you to be ready. This might happen again. If it happens 2 and 3 times, people won't have any sympathy because we need to learn from mistakes. The VAR goes into a very lengthy check, and the VAR is probably thinking about 2 decisions earlier in that day. One in the first half of Celtic Kilmarnock, where again there's a collision between the goalkeeper and the attacker. we think that's more of a normal football in contact. There's also one earlier in the day in a live match, the Dundee Derby. It's a very difficult decision. Again, we probably would support that there's, you know, contact there. It's more football in contact and momentum. But the decision we've put out in the show for us is a reckless challenge by the goalkeeper. And we are saying to the referee, we want that correct on field, the match officials on field, to try and catch it. And if they don't catch it, we would have expected a VAR intervention and an on-field review.
Do you guys think that's important then, as professionals slash ex-professionals, that does it help just to hear it? You're not going to, it doesn't change anything. We can't time travel. Does it help just to hear an acknowledgement? Or does it not make any difference to you?
No, I think it helps. I've always said this, that as Willie's saying there, just to be transparent. You know, if mistakes are made, I've made them as players, coaches, managers, whatever, referees. We all make them. But, you know, it's when there isn't kind of anyone coming out and speaking about it. And that's why I think these things are so important. You were saying off air, Willie, about, you know, being unsure about coming on. I think it's massive. I think it's so important for our game that whether people agree or disagree, listen, people have opinions on things and what they think's right or wrong in terms of referee decisions. But you coming on here and explaining to us, yes, we've made a mistake there, or yes, we believe we've got that one right. I think people can go away and say, do you know what? Everyone is human at the end of the day. I think it's the problem that we do have when people don't come out and talk. It's almost like it's them and it's us. It's referees and it's players and it's fans and it's referees. Do you know what I mean? We're all as one. We all want the best for our game. And yeah, I think it makes a huge difference. And I think it's easier to deal with. Listen, if Celtic go on to lose that game or it's a draw, then obviously they'll be frustrated. But I think it's easier to deal with those situations when somebody is coming out and saying, listen, we've got that one wrong.
Having said that, Willie, then the sort of number one next bit that we get on this show is, fine, we accept referees make decisions, but if a striker keeps missing sitters, he's taken out the team. If a goalkeeper keeps letting the ball go through his legs, he's taken out the team in the number two plays. Nothing ever happens to these refs. They can just make mistake after mistake and nothing happens. How do you feel when you hear that? What's the response to those criticisms?
I think there's a key word in there, and it's keeps. You know, the goalkeeper keeps making mistakes. The striker keeps missing chances. Referees will make mistakes. And I don't think that necessarily means that you're immediately removed from a next match, because everybody makes mistakes. Where we will protect our referees by perhaps bringing them out of the you know, a particular division or a particular competition, is if they consistently make mistakes. Because I've also got a responsibility, Gordon, not only, you know, to get the right decisions, I've also got a responsibility to protect the referees and keep their confidence up.
So that does happen. It just maybe doesn't get advertised.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sometimes as a referee, lots of it is based in confidence. You go into a match, if you're in a good run of form, you go in, it's like football players, it's like coaches. Sometimes the referee, when I was going through bad spells, the harder I tried, the worse I got. Before I went to Euro 2016, the January, February 16, probably December as well, I went through a really bad spell. John Fleming, the head of refereeing at the time, took me out. He took me out of the Premiership for about 3 or 4 weeks. I was angry, upset at the time. Nobody wants to be dropped. But when I looked back at that, it was the right decision. It made me come back stronger. It gave me some time out, gave me some time to find my confidence. We have a really robust marking system as well in refereeing. I've used the word, everybody starts to shuffle when you use it, or, you know, becomes a wee bit uncomfortable when we say accountability. Accountability is needed in refereeing. Of course it is. When I met with the managers in the SPFL across all the divisions, I said to them there would be occasions match officials would need to come out again to protect their confidence, or if they're in a bad run of form. But I won't wash my dirty linen in public. Because I would imagine Marvin could talk his experience as a coach that he wouldn't come out and say if he's dropping a player, you know, in the back page of the newspaper, I wouldn't come on a show like this and tell you I've dropped somebody. But I'm asking people to trust me that there is accountability in there. But we also need to offer the tools to improve our referees. You know, if somebody's having a difficult time, we need to have high-level coaching with them, conversations. There's no any point in us just bringing a referee out of the limelight and we just leave them. We don't engage with them. So an important part for that to me is how I build them back up again and how I help them get back on track for making right decisions. So to think there's, you know, I don't like using the word punished because it's too strong. People will make mistakes. Somebody makes a mistake in September and they make another mistake in November and another mistake in January. I think that's understandable. I think it's understandable because mistakes will happen. They'll happen week on week. What we don't want is our referees making high profile errors or clear key match incident errors on a regular basis.
And I suppose that's before we even get to the bit that what Marvin thinks is a mistake, I might not, and mm-hmm. Brian might not, but you might, and round and round we go. So let's bring in another caller. Let's go Conroy, who's on. How are you, Conroy?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good. What's your point tonight? I've got a funny feeling it's not for me, Marvin or Brian, so take it away.
Yeah, well, actually, on that, I think just a quick one first. I'd mentioned to you about 2 months ago, I think, with the Scotland lineup about Ryan Gold, and he has been called up since, so that's kind of worked out.
So you can get the credit for it.
Yeah, that's all to me. No, it's just a quick one. I know you'll probably get a lot of calls about VAR, and I look into it a lot, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. My question to Willie, and thanks for coming on, Willie. I think it's actually, as the guys have said, I think it's really, really good. And it's quite progressive as well, trying to get a better understanding for everyone. My question was, the one thing that frustrates me in Scotland is it's like, you know, the goldfish bowl, the scrutiny. The thing that gets to me is, you're expecting a high-level game, but you've not got full-time refs. So my question to yourself is, do you feel like that would be something to be possible down the line and then would open the avenue to have a kind of bigger pool of people who want to do that job as a kind of career opportunity instead of being part-time? And really, I just wanted to ask your opinion on that when you're on the show tonight.
Yeah, it's a great question, and thanks for asking it. I think if I'd gone back to probably the peak of my career when I was pushing, going to the Euros, you know, refereeing the Champions League, refereed the Super Cup final, that kind of period between 2015 probably to about 2019, I found it hard because I was juggling a full-time job. I've got 4 kids, you know, and the commitment that goes with that. And I was training every single day, you know, and the commitment, analysing games and looking at your performance. And probably at that time, I would have bitten your hand off to be a full-time referee. What I think we need to accept that many people in refereeing, I want everybody to know refereeing's for all. I was speaking to 120 school teachers today about the SQA award for you know, young people in schools, and I don't want people to think that refereeing's only for people with a professional background. It's for all, and that's a passion of mine, you know, really important. I just want to emphasise that as a side issue. But you've also got many referees, the reason I mention it is because they have very well paid jobs. They maybe are in a really good pension system. And to ask them to leave that, you would need to finance them. And with the best will in the world, we don't have that money yet, you know. I'm not saying in the future we wouldn't look to say, would we make some kind of payment to referees and allow them to continue maybe part-time in their job? They might be options. What I want to say that I think is really, really important, though, is that I'm going to work with the resources we have. I don't want anybody to think that because we don't have full-time referees in Scotland that the referees are not approaching things professionally or that we're not approaching things professionally. So I'm committed to making our best referees, you know, sorry, making our referees the best they can possibly be with the resources we have. But I think what the public need to understand is there's a lot of commitment for referees. There's, you know, I've got high expectations on match officials, and juggling all these different things are difficult. I'm quite envious of my colleagues in England, if I'm being honest, because they went away for a week to Spain for a summer training camp to get the referees ready. I don't mean because of the Scottish weather. I was thinking...
So just now, you want for me, Will,
you're
right?
Going to Tory Glen.
So, see, we are talking about resources. Do you think that, like, our best referees are now in the VAR room and we've fast-tracked the referees up the leagues?
Let me come back to that. I will come back to that. But let me just speak about so I'm saying about the Spain trip, and they've got the referees for 7 days and they can speak to them and the guidance and they can analyse their fitness really to the nth degree. We get our referees for 7 hours, you know, at Stirling. So it's difficult, but what I'm committed to is saying that even with that resource, we'll do our very best with that. We'll do our very best. I think it would be great if we had full-time referees. I think there's many of the referees would welcome it. I think there's some who wouldn't because they're probably happy in their career. Towards the end of my career, I quite liked having my job because it was a get-out for me. It was an escapism. Maybe the refereeing was an escapism for my job and vice versa. So it's a difficult question in terms of the finance we have. And Brian's point, are we using our best referees in the VAR room? We have to make sure that we have quality in the VAR room. It's not for everybody. Even if I'd retired for the pitch, Brian, I would never have been attracted to being in the VAR room every week. We have specialist VARs who are in there, really good VARs who've dedicated now their career to that. That's what they want to do.
That's Andrew Dallas and Greg Aitken are the two. Is it still two?
We've added Alan Muir.
That's right, yeah.
And we have a group of assistant VARs as well, former assistant referees. And I was actually speaking today to some clubs in the Championship, and I was saying to them that We need to fast track talent now. You know, we need to develop talent, but in the right way, so that we're able to service the game across the board and we're not taking all the experience to the very top level of the game. But that's no easy. But again, I'm looking at resource and I'm looking to think, how do I coach these referees better? How do I get, you know, new referees through to be able to confidently referee in, for example, the Championship, which I think is probably one of the toughest divisions. So you're right, there needs to be a balance there, without a doubt. But we also need high quality people in the VAR to make the decisions. And some people will raise questions, will say, you know, was that referee influenced because the person in the VAR was more experienced? Don't forget, no matter how experienced you are on the pitch, you get to go to the monitor and see the decision. So no matter who's calling you to the monitor, you've got the chance to go and see that footage and make the decision for yourself.
It's a brilliant question, Conroy. I had a feeling it would come up and it's sparked a lot. There's something else I want to ask about full-time referees as well. But in the meantime, let me just tell you all about this. How's this for a good day? Brian had just finished cutting the grass in Mount Florida when his Make Me A Winner call came in worth £112,000. Incredible stuff. Now, I have to say, I don't know what dent that would make if Brian wants to donate it for automated offside lines. I'm sure Willie will pass on his number come then. Let's hear a bit from the moment that Brian got the call.
You're joking. Oh, I've been entering this for quite a while. I couldn't believe it.
I doubt you would believe it. £112,000 over the phone. He and his wife Jackie, they've not been on holiday for 5 years. They're going to put the cash to good use as well, and we're upping the stakes. We could make you a winner of £114,000 tomorrow when we make the next call, but only if you're in the draw. Text YES to 61025. Text for £2 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at Clyde1.com for £2 or call 0330 880 4523, and the calls are charged at a standard rate. It's over 18s only. All the rules for this Rail Network competition are online. Here's the important bit. If you get the call after 3pm tomorrow, answer within five rings, say "Make me a winner" straight away to win £114,000. Good luck.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Brian Graham and Marvin Bartley are here. Easy shift for them. Willie Collum's on to answer your questions on refereeing in Scotland, which happens to be one of your favourite topics on here every night, usually. So it's good to have Willie. Great to have his insight. And I can see on Twitter so many of you are finding it beneficial. Like we've kind of said, no one's trying to pretend we're all going to agree on decisions, but it's nice to have these sort of conversations about them. And I love this one from Lee Cooper. This is one I can really get behind. Scotland against Hungary. What's your professional non-tartan specs thought on Stuart Armstrong's penalty? Brian was there at the Euros as well. So was Marvin.
I'm going to get a yellow card for asking that, Gordon. I would say, in all honesty, I'm a Scotland fan, so I was claiming for a penalty. Good. On the night.
And
so was the rest of us.
You were rightly claiming, or just because you're a fan?
Maybe we'll have that clip in the next match.
Well answered, Willie.
I'm now trying to put it together to see if Willie is somehow pals with that. I can't even remember where that ref was from. No, for what it's worth.
Argentina.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Oh, how could I forget? Yeah, Steve Clark remembers, doesn't he? Yeah. Incidentally, just to pick up on the last point, Willie, and I wanted to keep it going. We had the break about full-time refs, and maybe to put this to Marvin, again, you're open about it. You would like to have it. It's just a financial reality that it's difficult in this country. How do you feel, Marvin? You've played in England. You watch a lot of English football. I watch a lot of English football. So will many people listening. And I feel really torn on it, because I get the logic. Obviously, if you ask someone to do anything full time versus part time, they'll in theory be better at it. That's just logical. However, I don't really find myself watching English football or other football and thinking, oh wow, look at that full time standard of refereeing, I wish we could aspire to that. In fact, I hear every bit as much debate. I see loads of mistakes and loads of, I mean, like, official mistakes as well, not just a difference of opinion, times where they have to come out and admit that something's gone wrong or the process has been off or whatever. So what difference do you think it makes, just having just as a fan?
Well, I don't think it fixes all the problems, that's for sure. As you said there, you know, I watch a lot of English football whenever it's on the television, and they make just as many mistakes, maybe sometimes more. I'm not just saying that because Willie's here. As you said, you know, people talk about terminology when people are using VAR. These are full-time professionals, but they're still making the same mistakes. It doesn't fix all of the problems. The same way as Willie said earlier, VAR will not fix everything. Being full-time or part-time won't fix everything, because sometimes a part-time referee might actually just be better than a full-time referee. So, yeah, listen, you want more time with them, definitely. Willie said that. He got 7 hours and you know, the English referees went off to Spain for 7 days. I think he just wants a holiday, if I'm honest. But, you know, it will make a difference in terms of that, but it will not mean that everything's fixed. And as I said, I watch a lot of English football and there are a lot of mistakes being made there as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, they're humans.
I do think that, again, that needs to always be your starting point. I had a little look at social media, which is always a dangerous place, Willie, when we put that programme out earlier where we ran through the VAR clips and... in the intro, it's something that I just said without even really thinking about it. It was something like, we're going to take a look at the clips, whether they're right, whether they're wrong. And loads of people were straight on it saying, what do you mean whether they're wrong? I thought the point of VAR was that you wouldn't have any wrong decisions. And it feels like, how are we still there? How are we still thinking that that's a possibility? It's never about that. Well, for a start, it can't be, because many of them are subjective. But I think if you move your starting point to an acceptance that there's still going to be mistakes, whether you've got full-time refs, VAR, whatever, does it make everything a bit easier to understand from that starting point?
I think it should. I think VAR is to reduce mistakes, you know, the kind of key match incidents, game-changing incidents, but there still will be mistakes made. I suppose a frustration of mine, Gordon, is that, you know, we've had VAR, you know, the best part of two seasons now. If you look at it, you know... And even in a match recently, I heard a pundit saying, you know, if the referee thought it was a foul, they should have blown and stopped the game and awarded the foul when the ball was in the penalty area.
Don't tell me it was him.
No.
I know the game, though.
That's completely contrary to what the protocol says. If the referee blows too early for something and the team then score, that's a disaster for us. That's the modern day major error of refereeing, because there's no turning back. So it would help us. Maybe that's partly our responsibility as well in terms of refereeing. Maybe we've not been educational enough in coming out and talking about why decisions are made. And this will lend weight to that, this show, you know, and saying, here's the reason why what the protocol says what it says, and here's how we're implementing that, and here's how we show it. But sometimes I think, and I'm wondering to another point here, that's where I think the importance of the media as well, you know, that the media, the people working in the media are upskilled and they're able to contribute to the conversations and help us as well with that, the key messages.
I feel like an aim at all the Super Scoreboard pundits, but anyway.
No, do not do that. Even with the protocol being followed, Willie, we're talking about the St Johnson incident, right? In terms of that, and I speak from a player's point of view, what is your take? Again, I don't want to ruin the show that you guys have recorded.
That's fine. We're allowed to talk about incidents. That's why we're here.
In terms of the body position of the referee going forward, surely that is incorrect in terms of, you know, how he dealt with it.
Just a very quick reminder for people who can't put the pieces together. It's Cyril Dessau's goal for Rangers against St Johnstone at Hampden. The goal was chopped off by the ref. VAR asked him to have another look at it. The goal stood. And there was a whole debate about whether the ref had blown his whistle or not and what he was signalling for. What was your sort of take on it now, Willie, that you've analysed it?
So we had a good discussion, Gordon, in the programme about that. It was really good, but you're right to ask it, Marvin. It's a good question, and you'll hear me clearly saying in the show that the referee was coached to change his body language. I think what happens with the referee, he immediately thinks it's going to be a foul. Mm. He definitely thinks it's going to be a foul, because after the ball hits the net, he blows a whistle and awards a foul. So for him, it's a free kick, defensive free kick, and probably subconsciously he's lining up his body language for that. What I would say is that it's best, I know it sounds an old phrase, but it's really, really important, is that you play to the whistle. Mm-hmm. And Gordon asked me a really good question, again, without it being a spoiler in the show. He asked me a question about other scenarios where that might happen. And there's occasions often in football where an assistant referee wrongly triggers with a flag. And just because it might affect the players, doesn't mean that the referee can just accept the flag if it's incorrect. That's why we prefer to say wait till the whistle goes, you know. Mm-hmm. So the referee in that instance, in that match, you'll hear me talking about it in the show again, we are happy with everything other than the body language. But what's really important for us is we've coached about the body language, not just that individual referee. That clip was shown to all the referees and we've said that's where you need to control your body language, you need to think carefully before you make any gesture, any signal, But everything else about that clip, you'll hear the audio, we're happy with.
Yeah, no, like you said, the protocol was followed. And the thing for me, as I said, it was just the body language, because there's been times when you've refereed, I'm sure, when you've blown your whistle and players haven't heard it, depending on the game. You know, if it's Rangers or v Celtic, many a time you'd have blown your whistle and people don't hear it. So from a player's point of view, I'm saying if I see the referee turn and do that, it alters what I do. I might not stop, but that split second in football can sometimes, you know, you can be punished on the flip side of that. And like you said, the correct thing happened. It should have been a goal. If it was a foul at all, it would probably been to Rangers, if I'm honest, you know, being there and working the game. But yeah, I think, like you said, it's important to speak about the body language, because I don't think that helped. And as you said, you know, it's something that's been coached now into all the referees not to happen. So yeah.
No. For the avoidance of doubt, was the whistle blown?
No, the whistle was
Craig
certainly
Levine
blown.
Had issues with it and various others.
The whistle was certainly blown after the ball hits the net, but people have asked me, are you absolutely clear in that? You know, there was even a debate at one point that there might have been two whistles. But if you listen to the audio, which you'll hear, the referee is continually talking about, I'm going to award the foul, I'm going to award the foul, I'm going to award the foul. Maybe not the exact words, but that's what his intention was. So it's impossible for him to blow the whistle too early, because he's speaking.
Yeah.
So the whistle definitely goes after it hits the net. And Marvin, to pick up on another thing that I explained in the show, there was talk in the media, you know, would it have been a penalty kick for Rangers? Mm-hmm. You know, if you actually look back at the footage, for me, that's just normal footballing contact.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a foul for anybody.
Yeah.
I think it's just two players coming together. Mm. And it's another aspect or high threshold about contact in the penalty area.
Yeah.
You know, so for us, we would not have expected a penalty kick to be awarded there either.
I think it's time to come completely clean about something. We were planning on just saying goodbye to Willie at round about this point, the halfway point in the show. You all seem to be enjoying it. I don't think we've scared you off yet. Could we tempt you to stay a bit longer?
I'm happy for Brian and Marvin's fee chipped in together. that'll keep me a wee while longer.
I think that's
only
fair.
That'll make a dent in his 1.3 million after.
I don't know if we can convince him to play this, but let's see how we get on.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Beat the Pundit time, your chance to take on Marvin Bartley or Brian Graham. We couldn't possibly put Willie. He thinks he's been under pressure before. He ain't seen nothing until Beat the Pundit. We're going to do that next, so give us a call. Lines close at 7.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Marvin Bartley and Brian Graham are here, still joined by our special guest tonight, who is Willie Collum. He's loving it. He told me he loves it so much he wants to hang around a little bit longer. And these two are buzzing as well, because they've hardly said a word. But the spotlight will be very much on you soon. Don't forget, it is 0141 951 1025. Of course, it's a slightly different feel. There's lots to get through. We're trying to find out all sorts about what Willie's doing now, what he's done previously, refereeing across the board, VAR, offside decisions, handball. We've not even done handball yet. Who would have thought it? But we'll try and get round of it as much as we can. Send me a tweet if there's something you think we're missing. You can try and give us a call as well. There is a lot happening, but we'll play this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, Beat the Pundit time. How are you feeling? How's the form? Remind me.
2 out of 2.
I think I might be 3 from 4 or something, or 2 from 3.
It's not the worst of worse. Right, okay. Let's meet tonight's contestant, whoever they may be. I think they phone in on a Wednesday, Marvin, hoping for you. They've heard that you've got a 0 in the past. You're that, Willie. Honestly, they've got the cheek to criticise refs for making mistakes. Get a 0 one night, unbelievably bad. John's in the Borders. How's it going, John?
All good. What about all you guys?
All good in here. All good. And the great thing is, John, we've got Willie to referee proceedings tonight as well, so that'll add a bit of extra spice to it. Are you confident of beating one of these two?
I don't know if that's a great thing or not, to be honest, but never mind.
I take it you've never sent off either of those two, have you?
No.
I was going to say, if we'd made it through the first hour without discussing that, I'd be furious with myself. No. How many times you get sent off up here?
What, and they stood?
Just how many times did you get sent
Twice.
Off?
Twice. I actually got sent off, and then I think I came back the next game and got sent off again. But then that's when they both overturned.
Both overturned?
Yeah.
Not on Willie's watch, let me tell you.
Things have changed.
I think I've got about 6.
6? So you've been playing for about 40 years, nice. To be fair.
I remember I elbowed you, Brian, in the cup final.
You ruined it. That was my next part of the show.
Oh, sorry.
He's been moaning. He came in at 5 o'clock.
I can't believe you don't get sent off that game.
No,
talk
no,
us through this.
Kevin Clancy, I was actually back defending, and he's big
running, the steaming
dodge
across.
The dodge him, I call him.
Elbow, bosh, right in the side of the face. It was a horrendous shocker. Yeah. Left me in a heap and just ran away.
But then we were teammates in the summer. Hi, mate.
Hi. Come on in. So this is when you're at Hibs, obviously you're at Ross County.
Yeah.
In the cup final.
Cup final. To make matters worse, so he should have got sent off. I scored two that day and Kevin Clancy chopped two of them off.
What a guy.
Just as well we won.
I was going to say, you won anyway.
We won, so it was good.
You had the last laugh.
Liam Fontaine gave you an assist.
Anyway, right, let's see. Oh, I think we lost John. I think we have. We'll get him back, don't worry.
I didn't fancy it.
Oh, I'm sure he bottled it against you two. I don't think so.
Boys.
Let's toss the coin anyway and we'll find out before we get you two back.
What am I again here?
You're that tails. So you will play when we get John back.
Heads.
No, it's not. That's the head seat and you know that fine well. So please just don't cause me any more unnecessary.
I would love if he got a zero, but he did it, Simon Donnelly, that night. I would love to be on your case, so here, big man.
No, I'll be all right.
Right, John, we're going to give Marvin some greatest hits radio to listen to so that he can't hear your answers. I think John just keeps disappearing. What's happening here? Why am I? Oh, he does. We had John back and then we lost him. I think this is unheard of. There's uncertainty in the ranks. We keep losing John and they're having to line up another contestant. Your bottle's going to crash here in amongst all this stuff.
If it's not done by a certain time, surely we just move on. Oh, Willie's got places to be.
Willie's holding up the board. We've had to sub off John and bring in Frankie and Coatbridge. Frankie, how's it going?
All right, mate, how's it going?
I hope the signal's better in Coatbridge than it was in the Borders. Are you ready for this?
No problem, mate.
Good, right, we're going to give Marvin something else to listen to. Frankie, you've got 30 seconds. Just answer as many as you can and pass if you don't know the answer, okay?
No problem.
30 seconds starts now. Who's the current club captain of Dundee United?
Graham.
What's the name of Yanis Hadji's famous footballing dad?
Georgie.
How many teams in the Scottish Premiership begin with H?
One.
True or false, Pavel Nedved made his European debut against Airdrie?
True.
Alex Gogic joined St Mirren from which team?
Hamelin.
What club did Brendan Rodgers manage in between Swansea and Celtic?
Leicester.
Which team are currently top of the Scottish Championship?
Okay,
let's bring him back. Marvin, can you hear us?
Yeah.
We're keeping you there. You're getting your phone out. Willie's a former teacher. You realise that, you know, to just sit in class with your
kids
phone
now.
Out.
Phones will be least the problems in the schools.
Do you know what he did last week?
What?
I was in the middle of making a really good point, as always, and I saw him looking at his phone, ordering his Nando's.
For do you know how that ended home. Though? He tried to tell me off and then they cancelled my order. I was raging.
Karma, that's what they call karma. Anyway, you ready?
Yeah.
30 seconds on the clock, your time starts now. Who's the current Dundee United club captain?
David Bunsky.
What is the name of Yanis Hadji's famous footballing dad?
George.
How many teams in the Premiership begin with H?
Two.
True or false, Pavel Nedved made his European debut against Airdrie?
True.
Alex Gogic joined St Mirren from which team?
Hibernian.
What club did Brendan Rodgers manage in between Swansea and Celtic?
Liverpool.
Which team is currently top of the Scottish Championship?
Eh.
What was the final score in the under-21s game against Malta last night?
5-0 to Scotland.
Okay, Frankie, have you done enough?
I don't think so.
Oh,
I think the bag man's got it.
Oh, I hate it when he wins. I hope you're wrong, Frankie.
John didn't come back.
No, you didn't even realise you weren't playing John. No.
We had the music on.
No, we had to swap him out. He's gone. I don't know where
Frankie,
he is.
How are you, buddy?
I know, bad man.
He was better before that. Disappointing start from you, though. So Babinski may be wearing the armband, but Ross Docherty's the captain.
Oh, okay.
Got to know these things, Marvin. Come on. Are we giving him George? Willie, come on. You get the final say. George Hadji?
Maybe I've had intervention there, I think. You know.
Yeah, I reckon that's correct.
George? Nah, not for me.
What's his name?
I just can't be bothered giving you. How many teams in the Premiership begin with H? What did you say?
Yeah.
Two.
It is two. Did you say that though?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Because Frankie said one.
I love you, Frankie.
Well, Frankie got Georgie Hadji. He said it properly. Apparently true, Pavel Nedved played against Airdrie in his European debut.
Yeah,
1992. That's sensational. Alex Gogic joined St Mirren after Hibs. So I'm afraid Marvin starts moving ahead. Brendan Rodgers was Liverpool between Swansea and Celtic. Just Marvin. Top of the Championship is Ayr, not Falkirk, Frankie. He's running away with it.
Falkirk had done well, though.
And it was 5-0 to Scotland against Malta last night. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Easy, Marv.
6. Yeah. Even if I take Hadji off you, it's still an absolute doing.
But if you give me that, do I not get to continue?
No, because you didn't get Ross Docherty right, so don't get above your station. Frankie, hard lines. You stood in at the last minute and it wasn't to be. A better warm up next time, maybe.
Good boy.
Good man. Take care, Frankie.
Take care, mate.
Catch you after, boys.
See you, Frankie. There we go.
I had no idea that wasn't John. That
doesn't matter.
John just didn't fancy it.
What's the cliche? You focus on yourself, not the opposition. All that sort of stuff.
That is true.
Yeah, something like that.
I've got it. He won, by the way.
I actually did all right there.
Yeah, you're all right.
Raging. Maybe we could get some referees on to play Beat the Pundit in the future. That's
that would be class. I had Dougie Emery on.
That's right. Do you remember that? Dougie Emery phoned in and took on Marvin and lost.
He was awful. All week he was saying, I'm going to call up. I'm going to beat you. I'm going to call up. He was terrible, man.
We've had some others. There was a car of like Dumbarton players phoned in on the way to training one night. And it's quite common. I think we should start that, a bit of a league. But anyway, Willie Collum is still here. We are enjoying his insight a lot. And I mean that not just because he's sitting here, so keep your calls, your tweets coming. Some sort of more general ones, Willie, about, I guess, you and whatever in your career. Yoda messaging, just quite simply, what's it like to referee a Celtic Rangers game?
Suppose as you get experienced, I used to say once you'd refereed one, if you want to referee another, you're crazy. But they're great occasions. The atmosphere is unbelievable. I suppose the build-up was always difficult for me, you know. I think there was a nervousness about the build-up to the match, but the actual match often took care of itself, you know. You were involved there, and when you went into that mode, you just got on with the game.
So see, when it's Celtic Rangers, do you see any stuff on social media where, well, Willie Collum's going to do this, he's going to do that? Does that have an effect on you?
I was saying at one of the breaks there, Brian, that I avoided social media. Right. I think it was best, you know, probably to protect myself, protect my family. And also, I think you just waste a lot of energy, you know, because very often in social media, you become addicted to thinking somebody will say something good at some point about me, and it never really comes. Referees will prepare themselves. They know the focus. They'll prepare for the match really well, looking at previous matches, you know, the clubs and the build-up and looking at tactics. We don't just turn up there and referee the game, turn up 90 minutes before and that's it. You're building up the whole week, you know, you're adjusting your training and everything depending on what day the match is. But it was always a nerve-wracking occasion, I have to be honest, you know. There was lots at stake, and you hope to get through the game as much controversy-free as possible.
Impossible in this part of the world sometimes. How did you handle the aftermath of any game, really, but maybe that one in particular? You know, we spoke earlier about accountability, and do referees get punished, which was the word that we don't really like, but, you know, for making mistakes. There's maybe also a misconception of, well, you know, these refs, they just make mistakes and then they just get on with their night, but, you know, it's ruined my weekend and it cost a player their win bonus or whatever. How did you feel on a Saturday night if you thought you'd made a mistake, or if you'd maybe made a mistake?
Dreadful. When we've had VAR, you were able to see the footage immediately, because the footage is sent to the match officials very quickly after the game. If you've been an on-field referee and it's VAR footage, often before that it was you would wait in the highlights on a Saturday night, and when you see the footage and you've made a mistake, it's devastating. And I was really honest when I said earlier that sometimes it would be the Tuesday or Wednesday before you recovered, because you wanted to get it right. And I know that every referee is the same, you know, that none of us want to make mistakes. We want to get the decisions right. And I was talking to John Moss recently about that great feeling, and the guys will know what I mean here, when you're driving back for a game, listening to the GBX and the game's gone well. It's a great feeling. I've not been able to replicate that since I've come off the field, because there's no the same buzz, the same feeling. I'm proud of what the guys, if they've achieved well in the games, I'm really pleased for that. But I miss that feeling that, you know, knowing you've really performed well. So I want to talk about the positive as well, that great feeling being involved in football and performing to a high standard and doing well. But there's some lows as well. The highs have always outnumbered the lows for me. But when there was lows, sometimes it was hard to motivate yourself to get back training or get out the door. I've said quite openly that for referees, they need to go to their work normally on a Monday morning. And sometimes that was a task that you thought, will people be looking at me? Will people say something? I worked in a very good place. People were very kind to me. People supported me. I think they were proud of what I'd achieved. But it was difficult. And sometimes, Gordon, I think I've said this openly as well since I've come into post, that we talk a lot about mental health in sport. I think we talk a lot about mental health in football. I very, very rarely hear people talking about mental health in refereeing and how we support referees, you know, when they're in a dark place.
Are you the type of striker that stays awake at night and miss chances?
Of course I am. I think every player is. If you make a mistake, as Wally's saying there, the referee takes them to Tuesday, maybe the Wednesday. The players are the same, because you're playing for the fans, obviously, but you're playing for 3 points, you're playing for a win bonus, you're playing for your family. All these things add up, and if you've made that big mistake of missing a big chance, then of course it eats you up. The Dundee United fans will never forgive me. They hadn't won at Parkhead for a number of years, and they keep bringing it up that, well, 1-0 up, I get a great chance, ball in for Shifty for the right hand side, it's at hip height, I don't know where to head it, I don't know where to volley it, and I don't know, I end up like an octopus in a mile other place in the middle of the 6 yard box. The ball hits me in the hip, and Big Fraser Forster catches it in the middle of the goal. To make matters worse, Charlie McGrew scores in the 94th minute to make it 1-1. So the Dundee United, and by the way, I played against Virgil van Dijk that day, probably the best performance I played for Dundee United. I actually played really well in the game, but they don't remember that. They just remember, you should have scored this, that. So it's difficult. That was a difficult time, and they still they don't let me forget it. That was 2014, I think, so 10 years ago, and they still bring it up.
It's human nature, Willie. Do referees do that? Do you do that? Do you have decisions from your career that not keep you awake at night as such, but that you still think about, or do you have to?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes you even think the split second after it, who blew the whistle there? Well, it was me, you know, and you immediately regret it, or you get the feeling something's not right. I suppose VAR helped that, because you'd a bit of reassurance. Again, it's no perfection, but you'd a bit of reassurance that something was right, because you're not being called to the monitor. Again, there's exceptions to that. But of course, there's decisions. I can talk quite openly. In 2019, I awarded a penalty in Rome, in a Europa League match, and it was incorrect. You know, I misjudged it. It hit somebody in the face and not in the hand, even though the hand was out for the body and it looked live. And I wish there had been VAR. I think my biggest regret in refereeing, and I suppose that's where VAR helps, is that I've often wanted to press the rewind button, you know, and you can't go back. Now I think referees have got the benefit of going back and getting a second look at something. Sometimes as referees in the past, certain decisions have defined you, for example, you know, that people will never forget. Brian's talking about a miss he had, you know, at Celtic Park. Some people associate referees with specific decisions made years and years ago, and it's hard to shake that off. But I think with VAR, we'll get less and less of that, because even the shockers, we would hope, would be fixed.
Willie, how difficult is for referees, as you said, like your career was over quite a long span, but, you know, the threshold, and we talk about it all the time, is changing within football, and tackles that maybe at the start of your career that you could have got away with, you definitely couldn't get away with towards the end. How do you keep or make sure that referees are constantly educated on, you know, hitting those thresholds? Because, as I said, you know, they might have refereed games 5 years ago even, that tackle was absolutely fine.
Yep.
How hard's that?
Really, really, really strong coaching, Marvin. Mm-hmm. That's what's needed. You know, we, since I've come into post, we're coaching the referees in a live session on a week-to-week basis, so they know what's expected the next week, you know, what's right and wrong. So I think as a referee, it's what I always wanted. You know, you can't wait till you speak to a referee face-to-face at a meeting in Edinburgh or Stirling in 8 weeks' time, because there's 8 rounds of fixtures between that, and everybody needs to know what the next steps are. But back to the kind of main point you make, I often think back to when I was a young referee coming through the grades. I don't ever remember giving a handball unless somebody jumped up and deliberately handled it. Now, but under the current laws of the game, we have all different criteria to talk about. I find handball very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very subjective. Yeah. And it's very difficult to be 100% on, because four of us in here could look at a handball and we could all come up with different answers to that.
Let's hit pause on handball, because I think we should do it in a bit more detail, and I'm conscious of time. And it's funny, our pundits never let anything go. We're talking about decisions maybe that Willie regrets or whatever. Straight, I mean, the words hadn't even left his mouth. Mark Wilson sends a message. Aye, that Broadfoot penalty, he says. As quick as a flash. Straight off the bat, honestly. Something I've been meaning to bring up with you, speaking of our pundits, is he has dined out for years. Gordon DL claims that you and him used to speak regularly in the gym. He became a real defender of referees. Did you have the misfortune of bumping into our esteemed colleague from time to time?
It was great when Gordon would speak to me in the gym, because it kept me away from training for about an hour. I think my wife had wondered where I'd disappeared to. He was training hard.
So it is.
He was training hard.
That wasn't the gym.
Anyway, right, Mark, listen, I'll give you Willie's number after. You can discuss it to your heart's content. We'll take more of your calls after these.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One's Super Scoreboard.
I was going to say, I'm going to be honest, that I've got no idea how we've managed to keep Willie, I'm starting to think we've got him hostage here, to be honest, but we're all just going for it. He's not asked to leave yet, and listen, we'll deal with it some other time. I think what we will do is ditch the full-time teaser. Yeah. You two are off the hook. Willie's in, he's given us his time. Let's not mess around. We've got serious business to take care of. I was going to come back to handball at some point. If you want to call about it, you can. If not, I'll pick it up. But Scott's been hanging on for a while. Take it away, Scott.
You guys, all right? That's no bad. It's all right. It's not too bad. It's fine. Willie, take other wages, mate. Don't do them. Take other wages. The minor thing you've been there, just take other. I think I've been hanging on for the phone. But
at
anyway,
least I'm putting in a half shift, Scott. These two have done nothing. But anyway.
I'm really enjoying it, Willie.
Take it away, Scott.
Wally, as much as I've been shouting at you in the sidelines of Celtic Park, I'll give you your due. You've come on here and you've put the face on it, so I'll give you that. But I applaud you for that. Thanks. Mate. All right. So, couple of quick points. One, I think a lot of people in the football scenario is there's no consistency, Wally, right? You know, one game it could be a handball and seen differently, then exactly the same thing happens in another game and it's no hand. I think it's more or less, or the phone week or whatever, it's consistency or lack of, right? So that's number one.
Let's deal with that, Scott, because I just said before, it's perfect timing. We needed to discuss handball. It's one of the main things, and you've brought it up brilliantly. And that word consistency does come round. Talk to us about changes you've made or are trying to make with handball, Willie. We saw the first game of the season, it almost couldn't have been better in terms of trying to bring it to people's consciousness. Conor Barron, it hits his hand in the box at Tynecastle, a penalty's not given. You happy with that and what's happening this season?
Yeah, we're happy with that, and I'll tell you how we've come to that conclusion. When I was appointed into this role, finishing my education role, I was trying to move things as fast as possible. And we took the top referees away for a night at Stirling, locked them in a room for 4 hours, and it was death by clip. We showed them 58 clips, the majority handball. And we asked where we wanted to be in the season moving forward. And again, we were thinking about football understanding and the importance of that, and, you know, moving away for the handballs that people just couldn't quite get. I then consulted the Premiership club managers. I had to start somewhere, you know, with a bit of criticism, people saying, why did you not ask every manager? That would have been too difficult. And we kind of found some common ground there. And we actually found we were on the same page. The referees and the managers, with an exception of a couple of clips, were on the same page. And we adopted that in our pre-season guidelines. We showed it to clubs. If you remember, there was an incident last year at Rangers Kilmarnock where John Souter was penalised after an on-field review for a handball when his arm was tucked into the body, in our opinion. And this season, almost identical. You never get two incidents the exact same in football. It just never happens. But the Conor Barron one for us was exactly what we'd coached the referees. It was exactly what we'd told the clubs. And we were really pleased. And I think, Gordon, you asked me even in the show about, you know, about consistency with handball. Again, it goes back to what I was saying to Marvin earlier about coaching, you know, that we're coaching the referees, we're showing them the clips. And it was a good sign for me that when a handball like that occurred in the opening day of the season, we followed the guidelines, we followed the interpretation. But we need to be careful as well. The reason I showed the incorrect call in the Dundee derby was, again, to be transparent, but to show people we've now moved in a direction where handball's just no longer punishable. And again, if you watch the show, I've explained why that is a punishable handball, the missed handball, which should have been a penalty kick in the Dundee derby. So we're not going extremes where we're saying, mm-hmm. Well, we're not going to punish anything. We're trying to find some ground where people will understand it.
Scott's right, though, and regular listeners to the show will know that I'm not a referee, so it makes no difference to me, but I've got a bit of a problem with the word consistency because I don't quite know what it really means, because no two incidents are the same, and then we'll act like they are, and then we look for consistency, but maybe they're not, and maybe you think it's a handball and Brian doesn't. So I feel like consistency is this like imaginary thing that I don't know if we'll ever fully nail down, but is it just about hammering home that message so that ones like that, like you say, because, you know, it's inevitably going to happen, and maybe this weekend, maybe next weekend, there might be one and the hand then is a little bit further out from the body than Conor Barron's is, that gets given, and then people say, ah, there's no consistency. Will we ever satisfy everyone on that?
I think there's two points, Gordon. The first is, you're absolutely right, we need to understand there'll be outliers. there will be. There'll be people who'll say that's very similar and you've given something else. Again, there possibly will be errors. You know, I hope no, but there could be. Yeah. But there will be outliers with handball. But we've tried to talk about criteria. I think it's, you need to be careful if people think I'm only talking about football understanding. When I'm talking to the referees, that's a phrase I'll use. When I'm talking to the clubs, I'll use it as well. I'm using it here. But we're also talking in refereeing terms about proximity. You know, is the player able to get himself out of the road? Is it part of a jostling and an incident that it's natural for their arms to be there? You heard my explanation. You heard when you interviewed me about the Dundee Derby one. If the player who we think should have been penalised was challenging a player, it would be a whole different take on the incident. It's because he's standing in isolation. So it's about being key about criteria. And we're asking referees, where we're really big is we're saying when people are in the VAR room and they're looking at decisions in the screen, they don't just sit there and think, well, I think that's right. What do you think, Brian, is AVAR? What do you think, Marvin? We're asking people to say, before they come to that discussion, they're actually raising, what's the criteria we should be looking at? You know, if you look at a tackle, speed, intensity, endangering the safety, we're asking our VARs now, you'll hear some of that in the show, that they're quoting that criteria to make sure they're in the right lines.
So again, handball then we're looking for is the hand definitely away from the body, sort of unnatural position, the higher the worse, you know, the worse it is, I guess, the higher the hand is, but you'll take proximity into account a bit more if I blast the ball at Brian from here.
Yeah, for sure.
But if it's across from a corner and it hits his hand, he's got less of a leg to stand on because it's travelled further.
We showed a clip and we showed the Cubs it. We showed the referees at a match during the split at the end of the Premiership season between Hibs and Motherwell.
I'm glad you brought it up. You've got my attention.
Stephen O'Donnell, who I got on really well with, is penalised for a handball. But we think proximity is key. His arm is slightly out, but the ball comes for probably a yard away. But if you move Stephen O'Donnell back 3 yards, it then becomes punishable. And that's the fine lines we're talking about with handball. Mm. And I'm not frightened to admit that handball's a very difficult thing for us, even as referees, to judge.
Scott, it was a great first question. What was the other point you wanted to make?
The second one was, have you guys as referees sat in a room and thought about having the same criteria as what the rugby has, as in when they're having the decision goes through the tannoy so the fans can hear it, so they know exactly what's going on, because there's a silence and nobody knows what's going on. So if the fans would hear it, I think they could empathise a wee bit.
Yep, good question, Scott, again, and I can answer that. We're open to any dialogue. So you know, at some of the FIFA tournaments they've trialled where the referee goes to the monitor, and when they come back from the monitor, they give a description of what they've been able to see there and then why they're changing the decision. We'll embrace that. Again, though, we need finance. We need the clubs to support that. You know, we'd be asking for more money, but we would be ready to train the referees. It's not just simple saying, we're going to adopt that starting next week, and when the referees move away from the monitor, you'll hear them in the tannoy and they'll speak. We'd need to train the referees. There'd be a protocol there about what they have to say to make it understandable. You know, we don't want somebody in a one-word explanation and somebody else 5 sentences. I think where we could get better, without a doubt, and I think where we need to work hand-in-hand, not just the referees, the stakeholders across the board, we need to make more of a fan experience in the stadium, more of an understanding. Sometimes we've been heavily criticised, you know, for decisions taking so long, because there's a decision last season in the split again, Rangers Kilmarnock, we showed it in the guidelines again. Well, there's a handball in the line. It's a clear penalty kick. But
so this is Joe Wright. Is it Joe Wright at Ibrox?
But there's two very, very tight offside decisions in the build-up that take time to get clear. So that's why it takes longer to make that decision. And we would be condemned if we say, let's just rush through the 2 offsides, they look okay, and then everybody goes back and says, that's a clear error. The handball was really irrelevant. But I think, not just in terms of us as referees, I mean in terms of the game in general, worldwide probably, we need to make it better for fans in stadiums to explain what's happening when a check's going on, and not confuse the matter any further that suddenly we're checking a handball and then we're saying about checking something else. But we need to make it clearer, and we are having the conversations and trying to do that.
Is there also a, you know, how much do you have to work with IFAB or FIFA or whatever to do that? I mean you can't just say this Saturday, can you? Here, listen guys, go and hook yourselves up to the PA system and tell everyone what's happening. I take it that needs to be a bit more of a process.
It doesn't. In FIFA and IFAB, you know, Scottish FA, we have a seat around that table. We're moving in the right direction. We know the issues run about VAR and communication and how we could make it better. What we need to try and get is a system that works and provides enough information. My personal feeling, when the referee announces something when they come away for the monitor, if they're saying after on-field review, there's a handball by number six, it's not awarding a penalty kick, I agree with you, Gordon.
I kind of thought that when I first heard it.
For a huge amount of money, what is that really bringing to the table for you, okay, then, as a fan?
So would you embrace the chance then, pick whatever one you want? Right, well, there was one, the Brad Lyons got sent off for Kilmarnock up at Pittodrie for a tackle. Can we get to a stage where referee says Kilmarnock number whatever lunges in out of control, in my opinion that's excessive force and therefore a red card? Can we get to that level of explanation in stadium?
I think that will come, but I think firstly FIFA want to just trial the fact that they can get communication, you know, and that the referees are comfortable with that, because we got a lot of criticism in refereeing, as you know, and the next thing would be they would be criticising what we're saying when we're leaving the monitor.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I'm emphasising it's not just as simple as saying we'll introduce that next week. We would actually need to train the match officials to be able to give the right explanations when they're moving away for the monitor.
On the subject of communication then, I wonder if the extension of that, again something that comes around time and time again, maybe something that has been used in a way in the past, interviewing referees after games, where do you stand on that?
When I was on the field, there was times I was frustrated because I couldn't speak, and sometimes I probably would like to have said something to clear it up. I think referees being put in front of a microphone and a camera immediately after the match is a bad idea. I've said often that you know, for myself, if anybody had asked me on a Saturday night, were you right? I believed I was right. By the Monday or Tuesday morning, I'd come to my senses. I'd regrouped, you know, I'd thought, this isn't right. You know, it was different. And I'm sure everybody...
But you can't worry in that situation, because if you wait till the Monday, always waited to get your story straight. Mm. So you can't worry in that situation.
I think, Gordon, for me, I want to take that pressure for the referees. And I want to, through the show I've put out and coming here tonight, that speaking for them, you know, I want the referees not to be as focused on what they want to say in front of a camera or what they want to say to the media. I want the referees to focus on the pitch and in the VAR and getting the decisions right. I want that to be their big focus.
What'd you make of that?
Yeah, listen, I agree with what Willie's saying and what Brian's saying. Now, I don't think, you know, it's not an easy thing for the referees to come out and speak. And there has been times, listen, being the manager, you go into the referee's room and they have admitted that they've made a mistake. It doesn't help again. It's extremely frustrating. The stuff you guys are talking about in terms of, you know, referees going to the monitors and then speaking and then the fans hearing that, I think the biggest difference between rugby and football is rugby fans are a lot calmer. they genuinely are. And, you know, there'd be massive games, say Rangers v Celtic. No matter what you're saying, you're going to get it. And especially the way the games are now, if you're Ibrox or Celtic Park when you're given a decision against... Yeah, well, exactly that.
They're impatient.
Yeah, so it's going to make it extremely difficult. So I also think we then making it even more difficult for referees, because you've already seen, we talk about terminology, etc., and sometimes it being right and sometimes it being wrong. Is it an added pressure against the referees to think, right, I need to communicate with the person in the VAR room and get that right, but also I'm now speaking to 60,000 people. If I get that wrong, like you said, social media, mental health, is that going to help? I don't think it will.
And we need to just all acknowledge, and we're all bad for it, you know, we would hang on every single word, wouldn't we?
Definitely.
What did he mean by that? And I can already see some of it, Willie. I think overall, you've done the right thing, the association's done the right thing. I was happy to help out in terms of releasing the VAR audio. I can still see people, why did he say that? Or why did he say it in that way? How much attention do you pay to that and trying to make sure that the communication, and not because people are going to hear it, you know, not that, you know, there's some sort of secret, but that things are communicated in the right way from officials to players if they are going to be played on shows like the one we've done?
John Moss has brought a lot to the table with that. You know, he's worked really, really hard with the VARs about their communication, and also with the on-field referees, how they're communicating. Immediately when an on-field referee awards a decision, now we want them to communicate why they're giving it, what it's for, and for the VAR and AVAR to be calm, composed, look at things, you know, slowly. Again, we're up against it time-wise, but you know what I mean, that they're not skipping past anything or missing anything. Absolutely key that they're using criteria. So lots and lots and lots for us is about, you know, good communication, you know, that's getting the point clear, because we're also saying to the match officials, We now are going to release the comms, you know, we're letting people hear it. We don't want people to hear frantic conversations. We want calm, composure. And I have to really credit John Moss with that. You know, he's brought a lot to the table, his experience in England, and supporting their match officials. And I know the match officials have really appreciated that as well. Mm. I think they're a bit fed up with us. Sometimes we're telling them, don't say this, don't say that. Because in the heat of battle, and you're looking in a screen, we don't want them to be too super obsessed with thinking, I need to say this or I need to say that, because that will detract for the decision-making process. But we also need them to be in the right wavelength in what they're saying.
Has anyone been against that referee-wise? I know you guys are saying you want to be transparent, etc. Have any referee came to you guys and say, well, I'm not happy with that?
It's the opposite, Marvin. Mm-hmm. The referees have spoken openly about the show and whatever they've accepted. We've accepted for a long time. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake. Yeah. What I would like to help people understand is a narrative to why the mistake's been made. You know, too many people come to wild accusations about why a decision was made, which is absolute nonsense. What we are saying to you here is people make genuine mistakes, but here's why they've come to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. Is it about position? Is it about not looking at the right angle on the screen? Is it about being, you know, thinking about previous decisions? Reasons behind it. We're not saying that makes up for why the decision was wrong. But hopefully people understand why we've come to that conclusion.
You're never going to keep everybody happy. It's impossible.
Impossible.
Not here, anyway. Perfect call, Scott. You've asked about handball, communication, two of the biggest topics we wanted to cover. So thanks for doing so. And we'll finish off with even more after these.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Willie Collum is still with us, Marvin Bartley. And Brian Graham here as well. You can still get in touch on the phone, as many of you have. Even more of you, as you would expect, tweeting away mostly complimentary stuff, which is remarkable. I'm impressed. What about the other point I wanted to raise, Willie? Because so many people tweeted about it, like too many to mention, but thanks if you did. And something we get on the phones quite a lot, this notion that referees should declare who they support. Is that doable? You'll have heard that before, I'm sure. So what's the thought there?
First of all, referees need to declare an interest. If, for example, we had a top assistant referee a couple of seasons ago, his son was playing for a senior club, even though it was under 19 level, he declared that as an interest, you know. Or if somebody works in a company who's perhaps, you know, sponsoring a particular club, they were the things that we would expect referees to declare an interest. In terms of the team that somebody might support or a connection with a family member of that, where do we draw the line? You know, we want to encourage people into refereeing and say that you can referee the top games, you can referee any match, and we would put a blocker in that. And I keep saying, where would you draw the line? Does it mean, you know, if somebody's third relative had some connection somewhere, would that be a problem? If did they have a season ticket? Did they support somebody? What I would say, Gordon, and this is where I want to be really honest with people. When you're refereeing at the top level of the game, you've got a passion, you've got a love for it. You want to continue doing it. You want to achieve well. Refereeing took me places that when I was a young kid, I never dreamed I would ever be able to go. Why would somebody jeopardise that or risk that, you know, to say, well, I want to see this team winning or I want to, you know, affect this? I'm not saying in world football it's not happened, but here I want people to trust me in saying that that's just not the case in Scotland. You know, we're barraged by comments in the west of Scotland about, you know, a bias towards one club or the other. That's not the case. People make genuine decisions. They'll make genuine errors. And we're honest, you know. If referees weren't honest, we would have a problem. And for me, I think we need to move away from that. I think it's 2024. I would ask people, whether it be the media, whether it be fans, whether it be clubs, let's shift that narrative, you know. Let's get behind referees rather than trying to say we're going to pick a fault because we think this person's associated with that or that. You know, top referees for a reason, and they've gone through a long journey to get there. And once they're there, they want to continue that and they want to take it even further.
Because we get that point quite often made, and my response to it tends to be this, and that's me not speaking with any position of knowledge at all. Let's be honest, this is all about the makeup of Scotland and the fact that we're a really unique footballing country with two massive clubs, and everything's about that, really. It's about that rivalry. You then would have, presumably, so logistically, let's even say you were trying to make that happen, you would have if you are apparently a Celtic fan, or you were when you were younger, you're obviously not allowed to referee Celtic games. Presumably that's what people want. You're then not allowed to referee Rangers games. So you're trying to recruit these referees and say, well, come on board, be a referee, dedicate your life to it. But let's be honest, you'll never referee a cup final, because chances are Celtic and Rangers will be in it, or in semi-finals, forget that. You'll never referee a league decider, you'll never referee the biggest domestic game. And you know the way our country works. We would go, yeah, you can referee Dundee against Hearts. Oh, but by the way, see that sending off he gave? I think he gave that because they're due to play Rangers next week, and that's why he's done it, so that that player was suspended.
The thing is, well, I don't know how 2024, it will never change in Scotland, in Glasgow especially. It will never change. It will never go away. It's been there for decades. It'll be there for decades when we're gone. It's no chance of changing.
Do you find that insulting, Willie, or is it understandable? Because other countries do it, but then other countries maybe don't have the makeup that we do. Is it insulting that people think the lifetime of commitment that you give to it could be sort of overshadowed by a slight desire when you were younger for X team to do better than Y team?
Yeah, I think it is insulting, you know, because it's questioning people's integrity, you know, and referees' integrity is always at the utmost. What I would say as well is, even if you think about, you know, there's always people saying, you know, geographically referees come from here or they come from there, or this is a referee's background that I mentioned earlier. I don't care about any of these things. I want quality. And that's what we judge referees on, quality performances, people that can referee at the very top level of the game and deliver high quality performances.
We're almost there. You can still fire in some more messages if you want. You might be able to squeeze in a call if you can. I think we'd be lucky. Stephen says, just wants to say, really good show, having a public face to put across the rights and wrongs of refs and humanising their efforts is long overdue. I can see you, Marvin and Brian's thinking change throughout the show as you take it in. Don't know about that. Are we that easily convinced?
I don't know. No chance. I still think a handball is a handball. I'm not a penalty.
Is that, I don't know if you can pick like one priority, but is handball the kind of main worry that you have for the game? What would be the, or maybe let's phrase that slightly differently. What would be, is there a rule that you would change? You know, if you were the top man at IFAB, maybe you will be one day and you'll never speak to us because we'll be like plebs.
Not at all.
But what would you change?
I think in football, there's some things that people don't understand, like, you know, a goal celebration, somebody taking their top off, you know, and referees feel their hands are tied there, you know, and delivering a second caution for somebody for that, you know, can be a disaster. I would like to see VAR even further developed. You know, just now there could be a second yellow card given in the game that's totally wrong.
We saw Rangers in Europe, didn't we?
Yep.
So you'd support that?
Yeah, I would support it, because we talk about VAR being match-changing decisions. A second yellow card for me is a match-changing decision. I would like to see, for example, the Kilmarnock clip that we showed, you know, where a player was, Danny Armstrong, was incorrectly cautioned for simulation. It would be great to see that overturned.
So the reason you couldn't, for anyone who's not seen that, is because it was outside the box.
Yeah, it's a quirk in the protocol.
You can't, because it's outside the box, it wouldn't be a penalty, so you can't overturn the booking.
But the second caution thing for me is a big thing, because I think it's definitely match changing.
We spoke about that a lot when it happened to Jeff Day, and the question I asked back, I don't really care either way, but does that slowly get into re-refereeing territory? Because what if it's the other way around? What if your first booking is disgracefully soft, but your second one's nailed on? It's a nailed on booking, and you're saying, well, you can review the second booking, but it's nailed on anyway, and it's your first one that's got you the unfair red card.
I think that's the problem, Gordon. FIFA are worried about, you know, re-refereeing the game. Would you look at an incorrect corner kick that leads to a goal, you know, a throw-in, a soft free kick? Where would you draw the line? But I still think that, you know, we need to be careful. We talk about match-changing incidents, and you know, you're explaining there about an example where a game changed on the back of a soft second yellow card, potentially an incorrect second yellow card.
I think we're almost out of time. That flew in. Hopefully it wasn't painful for you, Willie. We really appreciate it. Did you enjoy that? Did you learn something new?
Learned a lot there.
Thanks very much, Willie. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought you were brave to come out and face it, so well done.
Thanks, Brian.
Won't please everybody, but yes, that's the way it works. And hopefully we can still go on and disagree with decisions all season long, because quite frankly, we've got a show to fill. And I wonder what Hugh Keevans is thinking in his man cave somewhere in a leafy Glasgow suburb, rocking back and forward, shouting at his radio. And we learned tonight as well that Willie's real ambition in life, forget refereeing, is to be on the GBX. So obviously if we don't take anything else away from this show, that will be that. So thank you very much to Willie. Truly, we mean it. It was really insightful. A pleasure to have him along. Hopefully we can do stuff like this in the future. Thanks to Marvin and Brian. Easiest shift ever for those two. Feet up in the desk most of the night. But we'll put them back to proper work again in the future. As always though, even though Willie's here, the biggest thanks always goes to you for your calls and your tweets and for listening. We do really appreciate it. And I don't know what you'd like joke you can crack about dropping standards. You've gone from Willie back to Gordon Dale and Mark Wilson tomorrow. So make sure you join us from 6 o'clock and enjoy the rest of your night.